And of course, this hour now, we'll take your phone calls with Marshall Masters as we talk about basically Planet X and what it's going to do to us. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Marshall Masters and, of course, your phone calls. Final hour as we go. Right now with this object, that where do you think it could be, Marshall, in relationship to where we are right now?
Right now, it's going to be below the sun and on the other side of the sun from us. What the Avebury Formation very clearly shows, it actually gives us the actual orbital path of the object. It pinpoints its exact point of perihelion, which will be when we see it on our side of the sun. Not good.
No.
Because the kill zone is what we've designated that area. It's between its point of perihelion. This is the closest point in its orbit where it comes to the sun, and to the point where it crosses the ecliptic. Both of these areas, this is where it's going to, we're going to see the greatest amount of solar storm activity. And the ecliptic is it's a dangerous thing because we have noticed over the years, we documented like S4 linear, and these comets are coming through, and when they hit the ecliptic, it's like they hit an invisible brick wall and they shatter. So we know that there's something there that's causing this to happen, and that's the reason why we're declaring this area. So when we see it, it'll actually be, when we see it 45 degrees to the right, 45 degrees up, and, you know, if you're sunset, and you'll be seeing it there from Avebury in the northern hemisphere, and it'll be, you know, towards us, and then it's just going to fly over the top of us, and that's the real problem, is that we're going to have all of this miserable solar activity. The way it rolls out is the sun, what the formation is showing, which was absolutely, the crop circle makers amazed me with this one aspect, because they show the expansion of the sun's corona out to the orbit of Venus, and which means that they had to take that formation and overlay a second formation. All right, this is kind of like the old layered structure. You have a background and a foreground, and the background was in the first part of the formation, and then the front element, which is showing that expansion of the corona, laid over it.
Mm-hmm.
And with absolute, George, the precision was stunning. It's not off by a millimeter. It is just dead on. And so we know that, and after we have the solar storms, and we're going to have the grief from that, we're then going to have seismicity and volcanism. We're going to see massive earthquakes. And bear in mind, this is one of the things I point out. They said, even NASA came out and said that the earthquake that gave us Fukushima, all right, actually tilted the Earth axis. Just a smidgen, all right? I mean, let's not get radical. It's just a smidgen. But on the other hand, imagine that you have a whole series of Fukushimas, the Japan quakes, that are hitting in rapid succession. Pow, 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 just like that. You create a resonance effect. A good way to figure, to imagine resonance is that everyone in the military knows that when you're crossing a bridge, you do what's called a route step. You don't walk over in formation, left, right, flump, flump, flump. Because if you do that, you could cause the bridge to fail underneath you. And because it creates a resonance. That's the reason why route step, everybody just walks at a different pace. You just say, okay, get it across.
Mm-hmm.
So now imagine you have a stone bridge, okay? And on one end of it is a big ogre with a hobnailed boot. And he pounds that boot down, and he sends a vibration through the bridge. And it settles down. Then he pounds his foot again, settles down. He could do that until the cows come home. Bridge will be fine. But now he picks up the pace. He pounds, and then the second time he pounds his hobnail boot, the vibration is from the first pounding is still emanating its way through the bridge. Now he adds the vibration from the second to the first, which is still not dissipated. Then comes the third, which is added to the second, which adds to the first. Then comes the fourth, and so on, until this rapid succession puts so much resonance to the bridge, it loses its structural integrity, collapses, and that's it. So my concern is that we have this rapid succession of earthquakes. And this is really going to be the mechanism that's going to cause us to have the pole shift. It's going to tilt the axis. So if we know that the Japan quake did tilt it a smidgen, take that effect until we have this resonance going on, like I said with the ogre, and what you now have is the makings of a pole shift. Now, in a pole shift situation, it's more like a great slosh. In crossing the cusp, I do a really strong analysis of the account that's in the Colburn Bible of the story of Sesuta and Hanok, which is the parallel to the story of Noah that we have in the Bible. Although there are hundreds and hundreds of deluge stories all around the world. This is something that permeates cultures everywhere.
Everywhere, yep.
Absolutely. But the detail in the Colburn Bible is incredibly precise. And what it really shows is that there's a huge tsunami. Sesuta and Hanok, it's a king and an architect. He has built the ark. And he builds it in an area where, imagine you have this huge tsunami wave rushing inland. So instead of building, people would say, well, the smart thing to do is build your ark in the harbor. That way, if the disaster doesn't happen, you turn it into a casino and clean up. All right? Wrong. If you put it down in the harbor, all the ships in the harbor, everything down there, when that tsunami hits it, it's just going to go through it like hydraulic sandpaper and ground everything to pieces. We've seen that now. But that water is rushing inland, and as it's going over land, it's losing energy. All right? And so in the story of Sesuta and Hanok, it shows very precisely this had to be some sort of extraterrestrial intercession, because when it's described where they placed it, you would have to have the ability to survey the land from the air in order to know where to place this ark. And the water rushes in, exhausts itself, and instead of going over the ark and grinding it to pieces, by the time the leading edge of that tsunami reaches the ark, it comes under the keel, lifts the ark up, and then pulls it out. And what happens is the ark then goes down a narrow valley, and it's just like a slalom, all right? And it just, boom, takes it right out to sea. Now, think about what did we see in 2012? Something similar, right?
That's right.
So that's the story of what happens, and it's a great slosh.
All right, let's take some calls here, Marshall. Let's go to Bill in San Diego to get us started, west of the Rockies. Hi, Bill.
Hey, George and Marshall, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Marshall, I just have a question for you, and then I'll just hang up and see if you can answer. Any of those videos or the pictures on, like, YouTube and so forth of Nibiru, are they real? And the twin suns and all that, is that stuff real?
Okay, the ones that I have validated, it's on the site. There was, these YouTube names, like DNR something something, and then Nibiru Shock 2012 before his account was hijacked. And Nibiru Shock 2012, I actually have a correspondence from him before his account was stolen. And the thing of it is that if your account is stolen on YouTube, you can recover it if you can prove yourself. But if you want to be anonymous so that you don't eat a 9 mil, you just got to walk away, which was the case of that. When I validated that and I said, look, you got to have two sources. So I have that. I'm looking for a second source. What I saw was an onslaught of disinformation that was horrific in scope. And I hadn't seen anything like that. Bear in mind, I've been in this since 1999. I wrote my first Planet X article in January 2002. And I do this day in and day out. This is my life 7 days a week. And so I see this stuff, and I, what is not noticeable to other people, I read right through it just as fast as can be. And also, having 23 years in the computer industry helps me as well. And so when I saw this organized, extremely well-organized, highly funded, highly motivated attack campaign on these videos, when I declared that to be legitimate, they turned the guns on me. And, wow, was that a wake-up call. That was a real education.
Sure and was.
Yeah, sure was. And it was Philip Gardner. I call him because he used to consult, teach propaganda and disinformation for the British government. And I said, what is happening? And he said, oh, you hit on something. Somebody doesn't want you to talk about this. And I said, who's they? He says, they is anybody with the money and a secret. They want to keep kept the secret. And that's it. That's all you got to know. And he told me how to fight it, and I fought it. And what I can tell you is the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, by God, does work. And I whipped them. And if you go to my on my site, I have an old interview called Extraterrestrial and Terrestrial Disinformation. I put it up there as a tar baby so that when these guys pull this stunt on me and everybody wants to see who's giving Marshall a whooping, they come and all of a sudden they're going to learn really what's happening. And then I have a link there for the there's a wonderful article written by a fellow about the 25 attributes of disinformation and the 8 traits. And when you see all of that, all of a sudden your eyes open up to what's really happening. You can understand then why people are unable to come to consensus on things, because there is so much disinformation and propaganda being generated. Why? It's simple, folks. There's not about this elite global cabal to do whatever. It is Titanic. First class gets the boat. Steerage goes down with the ship. We are steerage. It's as simple as that.
Doug is in Vancouver, British Columbia, first-time caller. Doug, go ahead.
Awesome to be on the air with you, George. I've
Super.
Been a big, big fan of yours for a long
well,
time.
Well, thank you,
listening
Doug.
Listening to the art since he began, and been with you from the beginning of your time, so I appreciate you being on the air.
Thank you.
I've got a question. I've got a million questions for Marshall now. I guess I'm going to have to put off next Christmas. Appearing,
Welcome to the Last to Know Club.
Yes.
I'm a charter member.
I don't even know where to begin with the questions, but I guess, you know, one of them would be, if this is an alien message, the Avonbury, I would assume that if it is aliens, then they would have the power to either stop this or let this happen. Would you be in agreement with that?
Well, I think what they're doing is they're warning us so that we can prepare. I don't know that they can stop it, and making the assumption, but we're definitely getting the warning. We're definitely preparing. In my book, Crossing the Cusp, I devote the last chapter to something I call an intention vortex, because I really was, you know, after doing this for so many years, it's like, you know, I don't want to, on December 21, put, you know, Peggy Lee singing, Is That All There Is, on an infinite loop. You know what I mean? I want to have some hope. What can we do? What can we do to at least mitigate what's happening? And that's the whole point of an intention vortex, and it is theoretically possible. Physicists will tell you that what I'm proposing could be done. They will also be quick to add that they would say it's a theoretical long shot. But on the other hand, if you got a better idea, I'd sure love to know it. If not, and we're between a rock and a hard place with an intention vortex, what I'm saying is that we are focusing human mental energy on one of the satellites, one of the small, most unstable satellites, to say we could push a large object out of the way would be presumptuous. But to say, okay, let's focus on a small moon, a small satellite that's a really, really wicked, unstable orbit, easy to kind of toss it. If you could nudge that into some other orbit, then it becomes the fulcrum, if you will, a leverage point that would affect a greater change overall. We may not be able to say, you know, push it away where it's not a harmful thing. But on the other hand, if it works, we could mitigate it so that this does not have to be as bad as it could be. And so for me, it's, you know, don't give up hope. You got to fight all the way. You got to fight, fight, fight.
Next up, let us go to Tim in Louisville, Kentucky, east of the Rockies. Welcome to the program. Hi, Tim.
Greetings, gentlemen.
Hi.
Really good topic tonight. I was interested in hearing about what the sentiments are about the super moon coming up for this Saturday and how the moon affects the Earth and potential Earth changes.
Well, it affects it, of course, with earthquakes. There's no doubt about that. Jim Berkland has taught us. Any thoughts on that, Marshall?
Exactly. Ditto. You nailed it.
Right on.
Berkland.
He's good.
He is. I went to a baseball game with him once. He's a neat guy.
As long as it wasn't a San Francisco Giants game when he predicted that earthquake, huh?
Actually, I was here for that one, and I was only a few miles south of the game when it hit. And I was in a business center, which was built on a landfill. And so when I watched, like, the movie 2012, and they're having a conversation in a, you know, magnitude 20 gazillion something earthquake, I'm really laughing because, I mean, I remember when that thing hit, it was like the freight train from hell. You couldn't hear yourself think. And I was in a parking lot, and I was the only car in the parking lot. I was facing a warehouse that was full of toxic chemicals, great place. But I'm watching, and the asphalt in the parking lot literally was moving like ocean waves. And trees were swinging back and forth like windshield wipers, just as extreme from one end to another. I saw all of this. And, I mean, I was in my car, and I was parallel to the wave, and I turned off the engine because I was mortified that the car would flip over and catch fire. And after that, I really feel sorry for people who go through quakes because I spent 6 months laying there in my bed. I was living in San Francisco at the time. And you're laying there, and you're just wondering, gee, if it hits again, what's it going to feel like to wear the ceiling? Not good.
No, not good at all. Stay with us, Marshall. Coming back for final phone calls with you in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. And if you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Marshall Masters, author of the book, Crossing the Cusp, Surviving the Edgar Cayce Pole Shift. We'll be back. On our next Coast to Coast program, Split Show for you, we're going to talk about the incredible problems with student loans for a couple hours, followed by Dr. Mary Neal, who will talk about her near-death experience. It's an amazing story. And when we come back in a moment with Marshall Masters, we'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Marshall Masters and your phone calls as well. So, Marshall, as we look toward the months ahead then, are we going to see any specific signs so we know that something's afoot?
Man, we're seeing them already. You know, I mean, magnitude 6 quakes are coming much faster now. We're starting to see subsea volcanoes. These things are happening. You know, it's tough up for folks out there because we tend to have a terrestrial view of things. You know, well, if there's not a sinkhole taking my house down, then things got to be on a pretty even keel. But if you take a cosmic view, you look at the planet overall from out in space, if you will, the signs are there that it's building, that something, it's like that little rash that comes before all of a sudden all kinds of other problems. And so researchers like myself are already seeing these early signs. And, you know, yeah, we get told, well, we have the same number of quakes, and it's just better reporting. That is nonsense, because for a magnitude 6 or greater, you only need one station for the whole world. All right? That's it. What we're talking about, the better reporting, is in the small quakes. And so we continually see all of this antics with mathematics to kind of mislead and befuddle people with how the information is being reported. But if you can look through that, it's already there. It's already happening. The trend is building. And, you know, then it's going to hit a point where it really comes upon us very, very fast, and people are going to be shocked. At that point, what I see is going to be, George, it's guys like you that are going to really step up to the plate and have a really important role, because you've been talking about this for years. And here's
and
what I
see. And we'll be ready.
You're going to not only be ready, but you have a unique gift that none of the network fancy boys have got. Because when the guacamole hits the fan, they're going to be sitting there going, okay, somebody give me music, give me this, help me out, what am I going to talk about? They're going to be flat-footed and trying to look intelligent. You've been talking about this for years. And the thing about it is what I notice with radio hosts, and the listeners need to understand, is that it's for a host, you're managing a process. And it's like driving your car and you're going somewhere and you're going down a windy road and you're talking with somebody. You're having that conversation, but you got to drive the car down the road. You have to keep your eye on the process. And so you learn to just pick up the key points, what's really important. And so what I am finding is that radio hosts who are talking about this topic and talking with guests and analyzing it are really even much better than myself. George, there's things that you'll pick up before I do, because your mind is, you've done it. You've programmed your mind to pick up on that stuff. And when the guacamole hits the fan, people don't care about what the suits upstairs want to sell today. They want news they can use. They want real information. Your audience is just going to grow exponentially like crazy.
All right, let's go back to the phones. You ready?
And I'm not trying to be complimentary. I'm saying that's what it's going to happen.
Let's go to Tom in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Tom, thanks for holding.
Well, thank you for the show, George.
Sure.
And a special thanks for the CC radio I got from C. Crane.
Oh, great. Good.
About a month ago. It is a beautiful instrument.
Sure is.
Marshall, you remind me precisely of a past guest named Gary North. And since you, with absolute precision, know when the world is going to end, since I have a pen and paper out, I'd like to jot down the exact date and time, if you would.
What? I'm not a priest. Go get a priest.
This is a slow motion train wreck. You have an immaculate exact prediction, and I'm just wondering if you could spell it down for me.
We've been talking about it all day.
Speak up a little louder, Marshall.
We've been talking about this throughout the whole interview. The formation is predicting that we will see this comet-like object. We're going to have a solar event. And from that point, things just are going to get bad.
How close do you think this comet's going to come to the planet, Marshall?
I don't know. All the formation, what I'm reporting, is what the formation decodes. It says, on that date, you're going to look in the sky, and that's where you're going to see it.
CJ's in.
It's also saying that when we see this is when we're also going to have a solar event around this time. So the month of December in general, Avebury prediction is saying it's going to be a rough month, which is consistent with much other prophecy that's out there. This formation actually gives an orbital plot. And, you know, in terms of trying to overcome your skepticism and doubt, I'm not interested. There's a word. It's called perception. I use the word awareness. Awareness is a loving way to try and help other people see what could be coming down the road. Elites use the word perception. If you're not intelligent enough to perceive what they're perceiving, then you don't have a right to fight for your life. And so whether you fail in terms of awareness, you fail in terms of perception, it doesn't matter. You're going to be ready for this or you're not going to be ready for it. And right now, trying to convince people, to me, is pointless, because it takes time to prepare. It takes time to prepare your mind. It takes time to build your supplies. And so for people that are going to have, well, I've got a piece of paper. I wanted this, and I wanted that, and I want the other thing. Go get it yourself. Or go to Las Vegas and have fun. Live fast and die young. People out there either see it and they're getting ready, or they're playing mental games. That's it.
And they'll never see it.
Walking away.
Let's go to CJ in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Go ahead, CJ.
How are you gentlemen doing? It is an honor to speak to the both of you.
Okay.
Yes, I've been awake for a few years now. I'm just turned 23 on the 15th, and I've been waiting, like, it feels like my whole life. Like, it opened my eyes to a whole new world. And yeah, everyone around, like you said earlier in this interview, they think I'm crazy. Think I'm like, you know, the woman's getting beat up and keeps going back to the husband. Yeah, I keep telling my family I'm getting prepared myself, but I have my grandpa and my grandma that I take care of, and I've been preparing mentally, like you've been saying, and I know that it's coming, and I live right here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by the Kirtland Air Force Base, and all they're doing is preparing also.
Oh, they sure are.
And I had a question about where the mostly, I know inland is going to be more of the green zone, because I know the military is packed up here in Denver, and I was seeing if you think that there'll be contact on the ground with the Anunnaki.
Well, you know what I say in the video is if Sitchin's right and the Anunnaki do return, it'll be three things. One, it'll start with shock and awe, and while we're picking our jaws up off the ground, they're going to snatch gold and women, and they're going to be gone before the worst of it. And, you know, that's what I see if that's going to happen. But you know, this is reason why there's a lot of prophecy. There's a lot of prediction. And if we're going to shop around for the one prediction or the one prophecy that does it, I think that's blindsiding yourself. I think it's better to say prepare for whatever may come. That what you have to really in the final analysis do is look at where you live. What are your resources? What can you do? And you know the natural threats in your area. If you're susceptible to tsunamis, if you're susceptible to quakes, whatever the problems may be, if drought. In other words, you can anticipate what's naturally going to happen in your area, what the threats are. And you start working in terms of planning and preparing to deal with that, because no matter what happens in the final analysis, you're on the ground where you're at, and you're going to have to deal with that. So just deal with whatever worst-case scenario is going to happen in your area. So if you know you're along a coastal area, you know, I mean, for the people on the East Coast, my God, you got, you know, La Cumbre de Vieja, over in La Palma, if the flank of that thing goes, and I think the flank will go, because Nostradamus predicts it, we've got a
tsunami of biblical proportions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, take out the East Coast from Maine to Florida, and it's going to wipe it out 40 miles inland.
At least.
Yes. That's right. And all I'm saying to people is, look, you know, it's not that you build a bunker 2 miles underground. But think about this. If you're in awareness, you're watching what's happened, you're learning to read this for yourself so that you don't have to wait for somebody to explain it to you. What does that mean for you? It can give you 24-hour heads-up notice so that you can grab the family and say, guess what? We're going to take a 3-day road trip. And you pile out of there. What does 24 hours buy you? It buys you clear roads, fuel, lodging, food, supplies, at market prices, everything you need, you get into position. And then by the time CNN is reporting it, it's too late, and those people are going to be absolutely in a panic trying not to get killed.
Marshall, Edgar Cayce also predicted major earth changes in terms of the structure of North America. That, you know, the coasts would be gone. Thank God he hasn't been right yet, but what about the possibilities?
We're going to see it, because what we are seeing right now, one of the things we documented a few years ago, we started seeing this subsea movement, all right, where you have seafloor that's rising up. 70% of the ocean is on, 70% of the earth is underwater. And so to think that it's only going to happen on the 30% we can observe is ludicrous. What happens under the seas is 10 times more dangerous than anything else. And there are seabeds rising. There are fault zones that are problematic. We're seeing major quake activity offshore. Look what happened with that 9.0 that knocked Japan for a loop. And if Fukushima takes another hit like that, that's it. All of that waste fuel is above ground. We're going to have Chernobyl times 85.
Wow, and there are a lot of plants built on fault lines.
Yes. Isn't that scary? I mean, you know, obviously General Electric is much better at paying taxes than it is at building nuclear reactors. Huh?
Brenda's in Santa Paula, California. Go ahead, Brenda.
Hi, George.
Hi.
This is really remarkable topic tonight. I'm an empath, and I've been studying astrology for 40 years, and I've been an empath my whole life, and I will be 61 in like 2 weeks.
Good for you.
May 14th. And there are things going on astrologically. Marshall is right on. We have an eclipse coming up on May 20th, and that will be at 0 degrees Gemini. This eclipse can have an impact for the next year and a half or so. And Gemini is the sign of the disseminator of information. We are also having an eclipse, a full moon eclipse, coming up this November on the 28th, which is a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And that eclipse is going to happen at 6:46 in the morning, Pacific time. And that is a full moon eclipse.
It sounds like we're surrounded by all this stuff. Huh?
Well, full moons affect the ocean.
They sure
and
do.
The water, okay? And for right. those who have eyes to see and those who have ears to hear, you better pay attention.
See, and what I like about what you've said, Marshall, not necessarily the destruction, but that you say it's ongoing. So many people make the mistake that they think this date, December 21st, 2012, it either happens or it doesn't. It's ongoing.
Yeah. It's like we're driving down the road and it's the Stuckey sign. All right? That's it. You know you've arrived at a certain point. But first comes the solar storms. We have the radiation, all of that problem. Then on the heels of that, you're going to have all that energy smacking into the Earth. Remember, what's the scenario in 2012? They said neutrinos aren't neutrinos anymore, and so the core of the Earth is heating. In other words, this energy is coming in from the sun. And I'll tell you that that movie, 2012, was chopped up pretty heavy, because when we published Planet X Forecast, the first country to license it was Japan. And it was a huge license. They went out big time on our book because they had inside connections with Sony. And the beginning of 2012 was going to be based on a Planet X flyby. And actually, the very first, if you look at that film, in the very first beginning, in the sequences, you'll see something. You'll see that object out in space. And then when you look at the rest of it, you can see where there's no continuity or flow because they had to chop it and hack it so much. That was the reason why they had to take it out of a blockbuster summer season and run it with the art films in November.
Right.
Which... And so, you know, this is something, again, the suppression of the knowledge is simple. It's Titanic. Elites get the boats. Steerage goes down with the ship.
And if nothing happens around this time period?
If nothing happens, the one thing that I wish for every day is to live long enough to hear the world laughing at my expense. It will be music in my ears.
I like that. Let's go to Aaron in Charlotte, North Carolina. Try to squeeze you in here. Aaron, go ahead real fast.
Okay, I'll be quick.
Sure.
Mr. Masters, I wanted to posit to you an idea that I had about this massive object that's moving near at near right angles to the sun. What if it's not a unseen planet, Nibiru, Planet X, or a brown dwarf binary companion to our star? What if it's maybe a large clump of dark matter, which would explain the gravitational perturbations and the Kuiper belt and the Oort cloud and the outer planets? And, you know, if a clump of it broke off and, you know, collided with the sun, who knows what would happen, how dark matter would interact with regular matter, especially on a subatomic level.
30 seconds, Marshall. What do you think?
I think that, you know, I think that the History Channel nailed it with this show on Nemesis that they did last year.
Yep.
They're saying the comets are getting kicked out of the Oort cloud, the perturbers coming inbound. And that's the reason why they put that show out.
Marshall, thank you so much for being on the program. The name of his latest book is, of course, Crossing the Cusp. And you can get all his information by going to his websites, which are linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.